you know, frequently we hang on to a guest a little bit longer, but in this case, I just thought it was better that we book David Elkington coming up for an upcoming visit of a longer time. And I didn't want to waste that opportunity, especially with more of these revelations on the way. And so that just opens up an opportunity here for some open lines for this last hour. We've given you the numbers. If you ever need them, you can always find them at coasttocoastam.com. You can take us anywhere you want to go coming up next, including back to any previous conversation that we had started on Coast to Coast. Just know I'm not the expert. And, you know, you can offer an opinion. I may not have much of a reflection on that. There are some very cool stories, though, that are at coasttocoastam.com tonight. And I want to highlight one more of those coming up next before we get into the open lines on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. This is a really creepy photo. Well, a couple of creepy photos that we put up at coasttocoastam.com. One of those is from the second season of The Walking Dead, which comes in a zombie head. If you want to buy the whole, season. I posted that photo, or at least I sent it over to Lex and he put it up. So I'll blame him. It's of a zombie head from The Walking Dead on AMC. And yes, that is a Phelps screwdriver. Anyway. Clever packaging for the second season. Worth taking a look at that. But even creepier, actually, is the photo in the Daily Mail. It's in the news section at the bottom of the screen for coasttocoastam.com. It's about this new spider, a very odd cave dweller, the unique eyeless spider discovered living its life underground. It's totally eyeless. That's even weirder. There was another photo earlier in the week. I don't know if you saw it. I don't know if you didn't want to even picture it. But a woman was dealing with an itch in her ear, and she went into her doctor, and they found out she had a spider living inside her ear. It's so gross. But they took a photo of it, which is even worse. But this is even horrible. Just go take a look at it. The eyeless spider. It's up at coasttocoastam.com. Open lines on anything you want to get to this hour on Coast to Coast, and let's start with Pearl on Coast to Coast. Hey, Pearl.
Hello.
Pearl's on the first time caller line in Washington.
Right.
Go ahead, Pearl.
Yes. Well, I don't like the fact that they're always trying to buy your information or just use it, the phone company and places like that, so they can sell it afterwards. And I had a complaint about the phone company, and they were trying to ask me my full birth date and everything like that, I guess, so they could sell it. I don't care for that very much.
I agree completely, and it's wrong, and the more we stand up against that, the better we are. The claim is, a lot of times, too, they use the security wedge, where they'll say, this is for your security or for your protection.
I know, and that's a lie. You know, that's not even true. I know that it isn't. It's just something that they use.
Yep. They sell it for the demographic information. Thank you, Pearl. This happens in a gas station that I go to, and it really bugs me that they want me to type in my zip code. So I'll use my credit card, and then it'll say, you know, I'm standing there like a dope, like trying to pump gas, and then I realize, oh, I got to go back to the display and type in my zip code. Now, they claim that it's a security thing, but that's bogus, because that doesn't stop anybody from using my credit card. I mean, if you could, you know, if somebody, for example, broke into my house, they'd know my area code, right, or my zip code, rather, so that doesn't mean anything. It's not coded information. It's fairly public. And especially because the area I live in, pretty much everybody, you can have a pretty good shot that you typed in this one zip code and it would cover everybody that goes through that gas station. But what it's about is obviously collecting zip code, and they're getting like customer drift, you know, who's using what, you know, how often do they get, how far outside of the zone of each one of those gas stations do they attract customers, blah, blah, blah. And I hate that. And you know, sure, it only takes about 2 seconds. That's a really long 2 seconds when I'm pumping gas in the middle of February and I got to have my glove off and it's really cold out. And I'm not kidding. I mean, stuff like that. It's those petty annoyances, which they claim is for me, but it's not. It's for them. And there are many, many more examples of that. Buying, liquor. I don't drink, but my wife will have the occasional margarita. And so where we go, they make somebody have to give them a driver's license and then they run it through their system when, you know, clearly we are old enough to buy that. And I know they've got their excuses for it, but I swear a lot of that is data collection about customers. Earlier, Dennis was trying to get through on Coast to Coast AM. He was calling from the lovely town of Binghamton, New York, where I had spent many an evening. Good evening, Dennis.
Greetings, Ann. It's a pleasure to get in contact with you. I'm a longtime listener. Fantastic topics tonight regarding the consciousness of man, with your earlier guest and your recent guest with religious artifacts and some new truths or confirmations that may arise once that study is finished. And what I'd like to mention is connected to both of these. Simply put, as I understand things, human beings, we are not human beings who have occasional spiritual epiphanies or experiences, but rather we are spiritual beings who are experiencing what it's like to be human, residing inside of these wonderfully designed biological containers, if you will. And as memory serves, I'll use an analogy, you know, an hourglass. With you turn it upside down, all the sand is on the top compartment and trickles through to the bottom. Our spiritual existence in the spiritual realm would be that top container. And of course, when a male sperm and a female egg meet, they form a single cell, and then the division starts. Of course, 2 becomes 4, becomes 8, becomes, and on down the line to various organs and bones and sinews and muscles and nerves and so forth and so on. Now, just as with consciousness and soul, I use both of those can be represent each other. They're similar.
Okay.
When let's say 25% of your soul is residing inside the fetus that is forming inside the womb. Science has recently proven, too, which I find very interesting, in every human cell and animal cell, for that matter, they've discovered these little thingies they call tubercles, and they glow in a living cell, and they do not glow in a dead cell. And they've even thought, the scientific studies on this, that this is actually where the human soul resides inside the human body. Just as with it, as 25% of the fetus is designed, well, it's 25% of the soul, our consciousness. And then, of course, when 50% of the fetus can contain 50% of our soul, we start having experiences. Half of our being up, consciousness up in heaven is starting to realize that thinking about this biological container, it's cooped in inside the womb and experiencing that. And of course, that part of the conscious that is residing in the fetus still has memory of its spiritual residence. But then when it gets to the point where the baby is delivered, I would say that perhaps 90% of our conscious is residing inside of the fetus or in the baby.
Well,
and the other 10% is still in heaven as the body continues to develop. But if you'll notice,
it's an intriguing perspective.
I'll be brief. When you see a young baby, a 4-month or a 6-year-old baby, lying in its bassinet, and it's looking at its hands and opening and closing its fingers with a look of glee on its face, it is a very intelligent, conscious being realizing where it resides now and fascinated about this container it resides in and learning that I can consciously make an effort to open and close these things. Isn't this fabulous?
That's interesting.
And then, of course, we become detracted from our religious aspects because of distractions that occur, like any kind of a noise that may go on in a class, okay. And turns your head and you lose your attention, your point of attention.
Well, Dennis, that's very interesting, and I hadn't heard of the tubercle thing, so I'm going to have to look into that. It's an intriguing take on several things, but I'll have to look into more of that other. I hadn't heard about that research, but that's right up my alley, so thank you. Jimmy is in Hollywood on Coast to Coast, west of the Rockies. Open lines. Jimmy?
Hey, Ian, you guys had a guest on a while ago. He wrote a book called The Real Crash, or The Coming of the Real Crash, about the America's bankrupt and eventually the dollar is going to be worthless. Do you remember that guy?
I did not hear that night, so tell me about that. Peter Schiff, I think, is the
author. I think
author.
So, yeah. And lately I've been reading on the Internet all sorts of other economists have been coming out with the same thing, that it's just a pure eventuality. There's no way to stop it. The dollar is going to be absolutely worthless and that there's going to be a bankruptcy. What's your opinion on all that?
Well, it's something we keep hearing. You know, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. So one of these days, someone will be right. I know that there's a lot of people have been pulling their money out of Wall Street lately. And this is one of the reasons why our economy, they say, is not rebounding. It's a lot of people have taken money out of the Wall Street casino, if you will, and put it into savings. And so I was kind of curious about that. Like, I mean, to the point of like $64 billion or something has been taken out of the stocks and bonds game and just put into a straight savings. And I wonder, what do those people know that I don't know?
Yeah, I mean, if they put it into savings and then overnight the money's worthless, they've lost their money. What are you supposed to do?
But wait a second. See, the key part was just they put it into savings. So that makes me think about another crash. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're going to talk about it. Crash is one thing. And then whether or not, you know, money would be worthless, that'd be different. I didn't hear that part, so I'd have to beg you for a little more time to get caught up on that particular topic. But there's too many of our world currencies now are connected to our currency. So I have a hard time imagining our currency would crash and nobody else's would. And if
this
the whole
idea was everything would crash.
Right. If the whole world crashes, then we're still kind of at net zero, right?
I guess. So we can go bankrupt and not have to pay any penalties?
Well, if everybody else is bankrupt too, you know, I mean, that would be the question. But I don't know. I'll have to take a look at it. Sorry I missed that show. This is one of many things I have because I have to get up so early in the morning. First time caller line, Chris is in Colorado on Coast to Coast on Open Lines. Chris?
Yeah, I was wondering if you heard anything about this Planet X story.
Tell me about that.
They're saying on August 16th, Planet X is going to be passing by Earth at its nearest point, and it's going to cause a polar shift.
Well, we'll know that then by Thursday, right?
Well, I've been hearing through sources that they're evacuating major naval ports to get ready for this, and the government's not saying anything to anybody.
How are you getting that from a secret source that doesn't show up on any other news source?
I got it through a website called thelibertyman.com.
Okay.
John Moore.
Okay, and they're reporting that these naval bases are being evacuated.
Yeah, they're thinking, the people around the naval bases are thinking it's because of upcoming war with Syria, but it's because of this situation with Planet X.
Okay, and so this is his report. I'm pulling it up even as you speak. So he says the military bases are under 2-week evacuation orders. This was originally posted on the 4th, and somehow this still hasn't made it into the mainstream news?
No, because they're trying to keep it quiet because they don't want the people to panic. So.
Okay, well, I'm good with this. There's too many other sources out there that don't care whether or not they want to keep it quiet or not. I'm curious about it, suspicious about it at the same time. But bottom line is, when will we know if John Moore is right? On Thursday, then, right, is the day that if the polls flip, it'll be Thursday.
Yeah, there's actually two dates: either August 16th or September 26th, because the experts are saying that's when it's going to happen.
I hate that 2-day thing. That happened the last time when we were talking about, you know, there was this one solid date. Absolutely, the world is going to end on such and such a date. And then there was like an asterisk at the end of that. Or this date. And then that date came along, and then that didn't happen either. All right, well, I'll be watching Thursday. I appreciate the heads up. I'll go look into that a little bit more. I hadn't heard that, but partly because I hadn't even heard that they were evacuating the bases for war for Syria. I guess nothing should surprise any of us these days. So we'll keep an eye on that. I'll pass that along too to the producers during the week to make sure that they know about it too, because George will be on coming up later on this week. Shelley is in Iowa. Open lines. Grab a number. There's plenty of them up at the website, coasttocoastam.com. Shelley.
Hi, Ian.
Hi.
I spoke to you in June. I was fortunate enough. You are my favorite host. Once a month, if we could get you more, but we'll settle for once a month.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and you got a great cast here during the week, so glad to get my once a month. Go ahead.
In June, I spoke to you about the Lipocodex with Maddie Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
I was unaware of that, the Lipocodex, as I am tonight. I heard you in June when you mentioned the Jordanian codexes.
Right.
I've been to Israel 4 times,
mm-hmm.
and I find it so. I saw those Bedouins wandering around. We toured all over Israel in 1977. We had a guard with us at all times because of these Bedouins.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know your guest is gone, and your screener told me that, you know, I probably shouldn't even bother to talk to you about this, but I just wanted your opinion. Why has it taken so long for them to find the Jordanian codexes, whereas the Aleppo codex?
Well, they have a totally different pedigree. So let's just the codex, you know, it's just a book. So here you have you have plenty of copies of the Pentateuch, the first 5 books of the Hebrew Bible.
Right.
They've been around forever and ever and ever, and which is awesome. Most of those, the oldest forms are in scroll forms, right?
Right.
So the interesting thing about the Aleppo Codex is it's just like any other Pentateuch, except it's in book form. Okay? So, and that it was very ornately done, and it is beautiful, and that people saw it, just kind of felt something different about it than the unrolling of scrolls. So it wasn't missing, per se, until Aleppo became hostile to the Jewish community after the formation of Israel.
Right.
In which case, then, they had to, you know, they had to secrete the book out of Aleppo, and then they thought it was gone, and then it returned, but missing in pieces. And the whole book is great about the Aleppo Codex.
I read it. It was wonderful.
Okay, so you know all about that. So there you go. So that's like the whole other thing. These other codices, these lead books, that's different because, like so many other pieces of history, they were kept in a secret place, probably because of some kind of oppression that was going on at the time that they were hidden. And people thought, oh, I'll go back to them and get them later. And then they never did. Maybe they were killed in battle. Maybe they were prevented because new borders came up or whatever it was,
exactly.
But they were never able to go back to it.
Exactly.
So that's why we have those little hidden shoeboxes of history waiting for us. It makes life interesting, doesn't it, Shelley?
It does. Were they just discovered recently?
5 years ago for the Jordan codices. But if they are real, they are many, many times older than the Aleppo Codex of the first 5 books of the Bible.
I see.
So there you go.
I just am somewhat skeptical because I know the Bedouins, they are basically scavengers. I saw them.
And there's a lot of, yeah, there's and a lot of forgeries.
I can't believe that they didn't find them before six years ago.
It's a fair point. That's what David Elkington knows. That's what he's up against. And that's why he's saying he's just give us a little bit more time to prove it on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So what we're hearing is that Ray Davies performed at the closing ceremonies, but was edited out by NBC. I love Ray Davies of the Kinks. Saw him in concert what, like 5 months ago? It's great. Reading this one review from the Republic, from the Arizona Republic, that said maybe what NBC needed was someone with the slightest understanding of the history of British pop. Yeah. Then we could have seen Ray Davies. I caught, they said that he was on the live stream early Sunday afternoon, and then they, but they yanked him from NBC's coverage. Well, that's just horrible. Silly. In any event, there you go. There's just a little taste of Ray Davies as we go into our last half hour of Open Lines next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. East of the Rockies, we go to TJ, who's just down I-35 from me a little bit in Albert Lea, Minnesota. TJ?
Yes, good morning, Ian.
Welcome, Open Lines.
I want your feedback on what I'm going to say here, and I think you can relate to it. The woman regarding condescending comments about Bedouin might not be universal due to something we refer to in history as borders. And the way the Israeli government responds to a Bedouin presence might be different than it is in Jordan or Syria. And you probably know something of the Sabians and the Bedouins, and a border can make a lot of difference, don't you think so, Ian?
Well,
Iowa and Minnesota, I'll guarantee you.
Right, but you would, I'm sure, be the first one to stop the Iowan Bedouins. Right? So, I mean, I think here was her only point about the Bedouins, and I think if she overspoke, I didn't catch it. So my apologies if she spoke condescendingly of them completely. But the forgery business has been something which has become kind of a cottage industry for certain types of Bedouins. And this is not her opinion. That is something which, if when you research the history of the forgeries in that area, there that tends to be the community out of which it arises, because in a way they kind of have the reason, they have the excuse, they have the "my goat ran off into the cave" excuse that allows for some of these discoveries to kind of take on an air of legitimacy from the very beginning.
Well,
right,
that's true. I mean, they're like Iowa antique dealers.
There you go. So maybe seeing how suddenly who's being condescending. Thank you, TJ. That's funny. There's this whole Iowa Minnesota thing. You kind of have to go with us on that. Reese is in Lodi, California, on Coast to Coast. Reese.
Good morning. Yes, Ian, I'm wondering if you might be familiar with a phenomenon called strite. What it is, it's a red lightning. And let me get kind of to the main gist of the subject. The other day I was up at Mono Lake, and 150 miles east of Mono Lake is Area 51. And it got towards nighttime, started seeing these explosions or flashes of red light. And as we're driving down the road, we got around the mountain that's in front of Mono Lake. The landscape changed, so I could see these lightning strikes that were. I know what a lightning strike looks like. I've been in some major lightning storms, and they're very bright white. These were pure red, and it was over 100 degrees yesterday in Mono Lake.
Hmm.
And I met a CHP officer because we took a wrong turn. Ended up back in Lee Vining. We couldn't get any fuel. And I asked him about, hey, is there any 51 over there? I said, have you seen those flashes of red light? At first he said, no, it's not. And then he goes, yeah, that is Area 51. He goes, that's the area I patrol, you know, the one with all the UFOs. I'm just wondering if you or any of your guests might be familiar with what strite is. I kind of researched it on the internet, or my cousin did. I talked to her today.
Yeah, I haven't heard.
It's very different than white lightning. And here's the thing.
Okay.
You got to realize that we're talking about almost midnight. It's like 95 degrees at Mono Lake. There's not a cloud in the sky.
Right.
Seeing lightning flashes, and there is no There are no clouds. There are no storms. And they appear to be coming from the ground up.
Well, that would be worthy of looking into, and I don't know if anybody else wants to comment on that before we get out of here this hour. You know, I grew up with a lot of heat lightning that didn't come with rain, but I don't know that area in particular, too, and maybe there's something else that I'd be curious about the particulate matter that might be in the air that would give off the reddish hue, you know, like with all of the haboobs and other things that have been going on, but fascinating. I want to know more, and we'll see if we can get some before now in the top of the hour. Michael is in Fresno, California, on Coast to Coast. Michael?
Hello. I just had a quick question. I'm a parent, and my son, you know, he goes to middle school, and whenever he takes, like, the big, you know, California test, he always gets asked what his ethnicity is, you know, and his race. And I was wondering that what that had to do with, you know, the test, you know, like, why do they ask that?
I don't know. They do like to do research on how well certain ethnic groups do vis-a-vis others. I mean, I'll see that in test results. I'm also a parent, and they'll say there's been a 17% increase in literacy rate amongst people who identify as Hispanic. And so that they look at that sometimes, especially generationally. I don't know about your case in particular, and maybe there's something more sinister at work, but in my case here in the Twin Cities, there's a lot of concern about first generation Americans and how they're learning English. And so, like, a community like the Hmong community is measured here often for those kind of metrics, and they tend to do very well. But still, there's new English speakers that come in to the school system all the time. So they're kind of always looking to see how well they're doing. If they're super serving those groups, does that help?
Yeah, it does, because, you know, I mean, he doesn't get asked, like, you know, for the school test, he doesn't get asked this, but when it comes to the big exams, like the CSTs or, you know, you know, the big tests, you know, for high school preparation or...
Right, ACTs, SATs, yeah.
Like that, you know?
Well, there's another thing, too, and thank you, Michael, I appreciate it. It's an interesting question. For SATs, for what they call standardized testing like that, they've been accused of racial bias a lot. And there's a lot of the questions really were kind of racially biased. I mean, subtly, but to the point where they've tried to neutralize the language. They've tried to neutralize the names of people. They've tried to do things so that there's less of a cultural influence in the question. For better or for worse, I think the hope is that they'll be able to improve test scores. But, you know, I'm all for kids. So if that helps, that helps, even though it seems weird sometimes. Steve is in Grapevine, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Yes.
All right. How you doing? Open lines. Go ahead.
Oh, it was just what I'd heard that other caller saying about the military evacuating coastal bases.
Yeah, what have you been hearing about? I mean, I've been trying to find out more during the break, and I really couldn't find out more.
Well, that actually came across my Ron Paul 2012 Facebook newsfeed today.
Oh, interesting.
I see that, and I'm looking at the YouTube link right now. It was off of a radio show for Dr. Deagle and John Experts in Weather News.
I saw that much back to August 6th or 4th or something like
that. Yeah, there's a video showing all these tanks being rolled out by train.
Yeah, that seemed kind of stock footage-y.
Coastal areas.
That seemed like a little stock footage that they threw in there, and I don't blame them for that, but I'm trying to find, like, something that actually was
It came through on my Gerald Salente trends on Ron Paul on Facebook, so I thought that was kind of strange. But
I do. It made it, and that helps. That helps. I appreciate that. I'm curious about that, too. So we'll keep an eye on that. Again, that indicated what a previous caller said was being claimed as a polar shift that would be happening on the 16th, and that the poles would flip and that everything would go dark. And things would go crazy, and that the military knows about it. And that's why they're pulling ships out of these naval bases. We'll know by Friday. Anthony is in North Dakota on a wild card line. How are things in NODAC tonight, Anthony?
Well, just hauling a little water for these rigs out here and getting a little work done.
Good. What can we do for you? Open lines.
Well, I can comment on the guest that was asking about the red lightning, and then I have a question of my own.
Good. Well, please do on that.
Lightning actually always comes from the ground up. When we think of like a lightning strike, it doesn't actually come from the clouds down. It actually comes from the earth up, and that's because it's like static electricity. You know, you have too much ions here, too much positive there, and if they're doing any chem dumping in the area, I mean, strontium will make fire red. I don't see why it wouldn't make lightning red.
Well, lightning comes from both the top down and the bottom up. And that's, I believe that you actually get both. So I think I agree with you, at least in part, because there is a lot of lightning that comes from the bottom up. But the top down stuff, that's frequently where you see that's when they meet in the middle and then they go sideways. And some of the scariest lightning is coming from both directions at the same time, right?
Especially if you're standing right in the middle.
Yeah, or you're in a light plane.
My question was, the guest you had earlier on the show that was talking about all these, like the lead indexes and stuff that they found.
Yeah.
So we have those, and then, you know, we have the Dead Sea Scrolls, and then I'm really big into the ancient Sumerian type thing, and the way I understand it is they are starting to decipher some of these tablets, and I know it's years and years for any of these things to be completed, but I'm just curious. There's passages from the Old Testament that are on these Sumerian tablets, and I mean, these kind of predate all the stuff that we have now. I mean, do you think that'll have any significance on when we translate these books? That, you know?
Yes, I think it would have huge significance. I think everything. If these books are proven true, if the lead codices are proven true, then yeah, I think it's going to change a lot. And I think it's going to even just the idea that they've introduced something that's been proven to have been there all along. You know, that kind of goes back to 1492. Right. I mean, Columbus, although not the first, and we know just by history, you know, he gets a lot of credit for discovering, quote unquote, the new world that was right there for him all along. But one thing is for sure, it wasn't in the Bible. At least in the perception of the people that were Bible followers at the time, that kind of rocked their world a little bit. That, you know, they thought they were the totality of the world, and yet here was this whole other part of our planet. What? And I think that made them reconsider a lot about the Bible at the time, and that caused, some people say, kind of the first ripples of later Reformation. So that I think we would see, and we may not even understand for a couple decades yet what the implications would be if those lead codices turn out to be true. And again, onto the cloud thing, Anthony's right. I mean, most lightning comes from the ground up, but, you know, there still is cloud-to-cloud lightning and other types of lightning. But so, again, what exactly is going on out there, as the caller said previously, seeing red lightning, still open for that explanation. And Keith is in Phoenix, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast.
Good morning, Deacon. How's it going?
I'm well. Where are you going to take us?
I was just wondering, first of all, I want to say, you know, my condolences go out to all the people that lost their lives in the Aurora and Sikh shooting. Well, yeah. Basically is what I wanted to speak about was right now there's a lot of stuff that Alex Jones is saying about there being multiple shooters and this and that, and everything's being covered up. So basically is what I was wondering is, what would be your take on all this stuff and why it might be happening? And do you think it's for ultimately to, you know, start gun control?
I don't think it's ever. I don't think so. I don't think it's to start gun control. I hope it doesn't. And I think most, I mean, I'm of the camp of a lot of people that, in a way, you know, because there was another gun there, it actually stopped it from getting worse. In the six shooting, the police stepped in and the guy was there. And, you know, apparently there's even a really cool story about that's not getting much publicity, that one of the police officers that showed up during the course of the shooting got off a shot from 75 yards away that took the guy down. I was looking the other day to try to find out more on that, but I don't see much on that. No, I don't believe that these are people programmed out there to start gun control. I don't. I think these are sick people. I think these are evil people. I think the sick shooting in Milwaukee is a direct result of somebody who'd gone evil. He may not have started out evil. He may have been a good guy at one point, as life, but I don't think so. I think he became evil, and I think evil is the absence of good. I think evil is that notion that some people get stuck in their head sideways, that their life is only worth as much pain as they can bring to other people, that they are steeped in their own misery, and misery desires company, and so they're going to make as many people pay for their pain as possible. And there's plenty of evil people in the world. I believe in redemption. I believe that I believe in second chances. But I think that guy was evil for a long time before he actually pulled the trigger. He was evil when he started to plot it. He was evil when he started to stockpile the weapons. He was an evil person up until the moment that he took that bullet from that police officer. And I think that to me is the headline from this, that there's plenty of evil people in the world to this day. And I actually was thinking about the evil of that when I was reading Homo Mysterious, the book we were talking about in the first hour. How is it that some people still come out hardwired, it would appear, or at least their program shifts to evil, and all they want to do is disorder good. They see good, they see happy, and they want to paint it black. And I think that's what we have there in the Milwaukee shooting. And I preached on that, and I believe in that. Jennifer is in San Antonio on Coast to Coast. Jennifer?
Good morning, Ian. I just wanted to comment on the gentleman that was speaking earlier and the lady that talked about how there's always going to be, well, I think there's always going to be critics on, you know, like this book that things that they have found in Jordan.
Right.
And I go back to the Book of Mormon with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You know, that book, it came out in a time and when we know it as to be true. And Joseph Smith brought it out, and he had to take that criticism, and he did. And he was told to deny it, and he didn't. So there are people out there who are doing the Lord's work and who are bringing about these documents, and it testifies that they will be brought to light. And
let me ask you a question about that comparison, though, to the LDS and to the Book of Mormon. Is that the Book of Mormon, though, has never been studied in terms of the actual original book. It's never been subjected to an academic research. It never went through what the Jordan codices are going through, right?
It's been studied. Believe me, it's been studied.
The physical original book? The original papers?
Yes.
The original?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
At a university level? Do you know who? Well, I want to. I'm better saying, who was it that did this? I'd like to know more about that, because I thought that's the interesting thing about this, that they're willing to put this up to a university study like the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I think that speaks a lot to the potential gain from that. And the problem with religious groups when they don't submit it, when they just say, well, you just have to take it on faith that this existed or this happened, I think we don't win over as many people as we do is when we're willing to, you know, bear ourselves to that kind of scrutiny.
Right. Well, it's been tested, and there's people out there, you know, and yes, you can sit there and, you know, people can say, oh, it's about the faith and things, but it all comes down to you as a person. Just like the lady said, there's going to be critics. But
yeah,
and you ask, how are these people going to prove it?
I'm gonna have to look into that, because I've never heard that. I mean, I've seen translations or people talking about the text of the Book of Mormon, but I've never seen the Book of Mormon actually getting a test like the codices. But that'll be interesting. So I'll look into that right now. Thank you, everybody. Always great on open lines. Never know where that's gonna go. And we'll just hang out there, the update on the Jordan codices until, you know, maybe it'll be a George show coming up when David Elkerton actually gets to make the big announcement on Coast to Coast. In the meantime, keep in touch with you at Deacon Punnett, DEACONPUNNETT on Twitter. Deus Tamup, and I do too.